Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America Roundtable episode, World's Smartest Podcast Network Roundtable episode. I'm Turner Sparks.
I'm Blowhard Mike Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. I put new stand-up comedy videos up all the time. Find me at turnersparks.com on tour all this fall and winter. And now I'm starting to get some spring dates in for 2023-24. You can find Kaplan and Cap in America on all social media platforms. Cap and NYC for all your real estate needs.
Yes.
Kaplan on the podcast today. We're doing the roundtable again with Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy of the Majoring in Everything podcast, Professor Andrew Heaton of the Political Orphanage podcast, and of course, you and I.
Yeah.
You are hosting this episode, big news.
Which was thrown to me at the last second by Heaton. I love the idea. Just said, hey, Kaplan, you've never hosted, go.
And you never hosted before. I agreed.
It's a great opportunity. Next time I'll prepare for it if I know I'm going to do it. But it's a great opportunity because it's so hard to get a word in edgewise with these blowhards. That if you get to talk first, at least you know you get some lines in the beginning. So it's a real fight. My internet was going a little wonky.
Kaplan, wait, pause, time out. You've just listed like three reasons why our audience should not listen to the rest of this episode.
I know it's a great episode, but I'm saying for fans of me, you will get to hear me in the beginning. You have me go. So it's a good episode. We have a great conversation, I think, right?
You did get a lot of time up front. I feel like no one spoke for about 5 minutes. It was just you setting everything up.
And just went going.
It was a little bumpy, but we made it through.
Hey, Heaton talks three times as long when he introduces, and it's less bumpy, but you know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a great episode. You all are going to love it. And what I just said, is there anything we'd promote? What am I forgetting?
Well, we've got a big announcement on our Patreon. We've got a new Off the Record with someone whose voice you're going to hear in this episode.
Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy will be joining us. We're figuring out the dates right now, but she's confirmed as the guest. We will be doing, as we do once a month, I believe we took this July off.
We take war-torn countries.
We'll take a guest that we have normally on our show. And, you know, when we have our guests on our show, there's a certain amount of stuff they will say on the record on Lost in America to a global audience.
Yeah.
And then there's certain things they will not say because for whatever reason, whether it's their career, whether it's their, the laws of their country, they don't think it's safe for them to talk about. Right. And what we do is they come back and they do an Off the Record show with us, which is for our Patreon subscribers only. So sign up, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica for $5 a month minimum and up. You get access to these shows. These are live. These are not recorded. These are on Zoom. And then we throw them away. No one ever gets to hear them again. So therefore, our guests can say as much as they want about whatever the topic is. Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy is coming on. She was most recently, and for a very long time, a professor at New York University, NYU, yes. If you've heard of it. And she's now left the institution, and she's going to talk to us. You and I have talked to her a lot off the air about what it's like to be a professor, a university professor in this current day and age, this current climate where the students kind of run the show. Yeah. And she's going to talk to us off the record. She said she will name names. I just spoke to her on the phone. She'll go as far as she needs to go because it's not being recorded.
No, and I want to find out once and for all, because we have guests all the time from countries where you do not have free speech. where you can get killed for saying the wrong thing. So I want to find out once and for all, which is a more scary situation, saying the truth about those countries or saying the truth about academia in America?
Yes, in a university setting.
I think a university might be more frigid. So
well, we'll find out. Story. It could be. She has a ton of stories, specifics, details about what it's like in 2021, 22, 23 to be teaching 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-olds.
Zoomers.
And what those conversations.
We're going to trash some Zoomers. This episode.
We'll see. Maybe. Maybe she loves it. I mean, yeah. She doesn't work there anymore. So to her choice, by the way, she wasn't fired. I don't want to say she was fired. She left under her own accord. Yeah. But anyway, that'll be great. So go to patreon.com/lostinamerica now. Sign up. And we will be doing that show in the next couple of weeks here. We'll have a date for that very soon. I believe that is it, Kaplan. Should we get to the episode?
Let's get to it. Welcome to another edition of the World's Smartest Podcast Roundtable. This is an unfamiliar voice to many. Mike Kaplan here, Sir Michael Ira Kaplan. And I'm joined here by, my partner in crime, Turner Sparks of the Lost in America podcast.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, good to see you, Turner. Long
good
time
to
see
you, and I'm Kat. This is going great.
I'm joined by Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy. Are you still a doctor? First question.
I am still a doctor. I don't think they can take it away, but challenge accepted. If I get canceled,
I think Dr. Bill Cosby's still a doctor, so you're safe.
I like the idea that they expire, right, that your doctor license just expires, and then you become just a person.
It should.
Exactly.
It should expire.
No, you get it for life. It's like if you coach a basketball team 30 years ago, you're still called coach. You're still doctor, no matter what. So,
or chef.
And that other voice there is a professor. We call you Professor Andrew Heaton.
Yep. Professor Andrew Heaton of the Political Orphanage. Good to see you, Kaplan, at all.
Yes. Good to see you. And today we have a wide range of topics to get to, right? We've got, what are we starting with? We'll start with conspiracy theories.
Keeping it light.
What's that?
No, we're going to keep it light.
Keeping it light. Yes, we're keeping it light. This is the best roundtable we've had so far. We're off to a good start here. So we're starting with the idea that in conspiracy, apparently, there was an article in the New York Times that caught all of our attentions, piqued our interest. The conspiracy theory world, among the conspiracy theorists, they're up in arms. The old school conspiracy theorists are saying these new conspiracy theorists are a bunch of sellouts. And they're ruining our good name. They're, it's like the band that they're making too much money. Alex Jones, the Q people, they're making tons of money. They're crazier than ever. It's like rock and roll got louder, became heavy metal. So they're up in arms, and we're gonna figure out if they have a point. I think that's what we want to get to. Like, do they have a point? Did conspiracy theorists get crazier? Were they always crazy? Where should we start? Who's got the, who wants to raise their hand? How do we do this? Andrew Jones.
I agree, Kaplan, that it was an interesting article and a couple of follow-on articles. So basically my read on it is that you're right that the conspiracy theories have gone mainstream. People are arguing that it's selling out. It's like when all those bands did Verizon commercials or whatever it was. But I think one of the other pieces is that the old school conspiracy theorists, like the 9/11, JFK, like the flat earthers, even, the classics, yeah, right? All have become concerned that not only are conspiracy theorists becoming more mainstream, but also they're becoming more violent. And a lot of conspiracy theories, even though, it's about sinister things, they're not out there attacking people or attacking each other or freaking out and causing a whole bunch of major political and violent rifts in the way that, the right sort of has hijacked the conspiracy movement, according to these more traditional purists. And,
right, like the moon landing
and I had never thought
storm
of conspiracy. Yeah, I had never thought of conspiracy theorists previously until I read this article as, their own sort of community of like-minded individuals who are just there to kind of shed light on some things. And they're not here to, start wars or scream at each other. If anything, I sort of read it as like a yearning for a sense of community that is now lost since they've gone mainstream. Kind of like when UCB started getting famous in the improv scene and it stopped being a place to hang out with your friends and was
exactly
more of like a place to be seen. It's exactly the same. Yeah.
So one thing that did catch me about this article, which was very interesting in the New York Times, he says up front, we reached out to a bunch of conspiracy theorists, but only left-wing conspiracy theorists would talk to us. Mm. And so I already am somewhat suspect as to the take on this, because first of all, obligatory, I think the left-wing, right-wing thing is bullshit. I won't go into that, but I'm already kind of like, in a world of lizard people and QAnon and UFOs, I feel like that spectrum's even dumber than usual because these are so outlandish. But okay, the people that are on blue team would come and participate, whereas the people that were on red team would not come and participate. So I'm not really surprised that like the blue team oriented conspiracy theorists would be like, but these red team conspiracy theorists, they're awful. We really got to keep our eye on them. Like, I already feel like there's a selection bias that's got into it. It made me think more about just the nature of conspiracy theories, because I feel like the last couple of years there have been, how do I put it? There have been really dumb conspiracy theories, and at the same time, it turns out a bunch of them are right. The lab leak one. I interviewed Matt Ridley on this. Matt Ridley was not claiming that it was some weird Jewish plot or anything like that. What he basically said was he thought that was Turner. He basically thought that the Virology Institute was studying this virus in hopes of using it in a defensive measure and an escape. That was the predominant lab leak theory. But that was a conspiracy theory, and it was incredibly derided within media circles. And now it's like, no, it turns out that appears to be what happened, but it was just not allowed to be spoken about for a while. And there was a recent report that came out where I don't remember the specific report, but a report came out that was kind of the official governing report from a bunch of virology scientists about how this is all ridiculous, et cetera, et cetera. And then like a couple of years later, you start going through their email that was released to the public and they're like, it has a point. Like, and one of them's like, it seems kind of likely. Like, so there was a very political edge to it.
I thought the whole thing was, we don't know still, but maybe I'm just reading the left leaning stuff.
We don't know.
Yeah.
There's no conclusive evidence, but I think at this point it is, there are plenty of sane, rational people that believe it is a likely, if not the most likely explanation, as opposed to being a fringe crackpot theory. I have not been following the stuff on vaccinations. I got vaccinated. I've been pretty pro-vaccination from the beginning, but it's my understanding that some stuff's coming out that's like, well, maybe there are some rare cases, heart attacks and things. So like, I feel like they kind of have a point on their side some of the time, which is the innate problem with conspiracy theories is that conspiracy theories are pejorative, fringe, lunatic bullshit until they're right, and then they cease being conspiracy theories. Then they just become fact.
Yeah, I mean, can I jump in here? The other ones, first of all, the lab leak thing, I mean, of course, I don't know, I was shocked that anybody was like, whoa, 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 we don't know yet. I'm like, what part of this do we not know? It's I don't know. From the very beginning, that seemed like the most logical explanation. I didn't think of it as a conspiracy. It was only a conspiracy theory because I guess you would say like major media was denying it. But I feel like most intelligent, like deep people who actually thought about it, who followed the WHO's investigation of it and all that kind of stuff were like, yeah, this is just kind of normal. I mean, Jon Stewart went on Stephen Colbert's show 3 years ago and was like, oh yeah, it's from a lab in Wuhan. And then Colbert, like the shock and clutching of pearls,
so uncomfortable
that he did. He went, whoa, 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 John, we can't say that. And I think because the Stephen Colbert left, his version of the left had decided that if you say it's from a lab in China, then you hate Asian people.
You are racist.
That was like the connection he made.
Far less racist for it to be from a dirty, dirty wet market in dirty, dirty China. That's not a racist explanation at all.
Virology
Institute messed up.
Any kind of like a logical, I don't know, like someone who could think below the surface just slightly would like, well, but we can both be true. The Chinese people can be great people. Asian people can be great people. And this could have come from a lab. Well, they're not linked at the hip. But other theories to back you up, Heaton, that have become true. Aliens exist. We do have aliens, right?
I got to push back. I think that that's wildly misinterpreted.
No. So yeah. There's no such thing. Where's okay. All right. Well, I don't know. According to the United States government, aliens exist. Another one.
But that obviously
according
is
to the United
conspiracy.
States government, unidentified aerial phenomena exist. Like there's right. no official representative of the United States government has said there are aliens and I have seen them. There is one guy, which is fascinating.
I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. Sorry.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Go ahead. Sorry.
There is a group of all these powerful people around the world who were pedophiles having sex with kids. That's true as well, right? So they're
like Epstein.
Well, there are pedophiles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
And Prince Andrews or Prince Andrew. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Bill Clinton. I mean, like, you know, the list goes on.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
27 times on the island. These are all those are unless you guys don't think that Epstein did anything wrong. I mean, I'm you know, I think he did, but maybe you don't. You know, that's your thing. But the point is that. Am I saying anything controversial?
Is our silence meant to imply we think he was fine? Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not. I don't think I'm saying anything controversial. That there have been talks of aliens and Epstein was a bad guy. So anyway, point is, yes, I agree with Heaton. Somebody
so
else
I think ahead. I think there's a point here that, and maybe this is me doing too much waffling or too much backing out now, but I think that there's a difference between I think that we need to define a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy Good. Theory, in my mind, is something that is specifically a set of beliefs that there is some central, secret, organized group doing something or pulling some sort of strings. And I think that the beyond that, we're in the world of like rumors or wondering. But I thought it's in order to be a conspiracy theory, specifically, we're being kept from some piece of information from some central. So JFK, 9/11, those are like inside secret groups who are doing these sorts of things. So the, you know, secret groups being pedophiles, I think would fall under that category. I feel like the lab leak, I never thought of that one as a conspiracy theory. It was more of like a disagreement, and there were some political charge on either side as to what you were saying if you thought, and I think Turner's right that people did wrongly link that this was, oh, I'm racist, or I'm assuming that, but it doesn't become a conspiracy theory unless we assume that the rest of the world is conspiring, or some secret leaders are conspiring to keep us from knowing that it was a lab leak, or there's some secret leadership in China that's keeping us from knowing. I thought that was what elevated something to conspiracy theory, as opposed to like even the flat earth thing is like the scientists, someone is lying to us about the roundness of the earth. Like that, I think in order to, my argument is that in order to be a conspiracy theory, it has to have that other element. Otherwise, it's like a disagreement. The microchip thing in the vaccines, that could be a conspiracy theory. The idea that the vaccines themselves might be dangerous, I don't know that on the surface it would count as a conspiracy theory.
Gotcha. So
I don't know
if that's a crackpot theory. A crackpot theory is not necessarily a conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theory requires that there being some malicious, willful
There's conspiring
that is perpetrating something. Yeah.
Well, but in the case of China, there was the of the lab leak theory. There was the idea of the gain of function research. That's what the conspiracy theorists really grabbed onto.
Yeah.
And
Fauci had been directing money to the Wuhan lab, which sounds very conspiratorial. Of like Fauci, the guy you guys hate, was the one pulling the string, and then later on you're like, oh yeah, okay, we did give money to the
Wuhan Institute. So like there was some truth. It wasn't all true, but there was enough truth that they can then hang their hat on that, and then they can believe everything else.
And can I just ask for the purpose of today's topic, what are we, Kaplan? So what if conspiracy theories are true or not? What are we talking about? Can I ask that?
Well, no, I think that can you guys hear me, by the way? Because we're really breaking up. Okay, because I can't see anything. I think to me, the idea is that they're the violence aspect. I think you guys mentioned it earlier. Is that it was more like conspiracy was like fun. You know, it's fun to have a crazy uncle who believes, in the moon landing.
He's into
the
Kennedy assassination. He likes to talk about it at Thanksgiving. It's fun.
Yeah. But then when, nobody stormed
NASA. You can
get lost
on Reddit forums. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't storm NASA over that, but then you stormed the Capitol over the election, and having an actual president who believes in this stuff. And having another candidate in Robert F. Kennedy, he's not really a real candidate maybe, but who believes in this stuff. We could be going down the dangerous road, I guess, is a part of it.
See, here I take the long-term view too, where I'm not sure that there is a halcyon golden age of fun conspiracy theories I really enjoy conspiracy theories. I grew up listening to Coast to Coast AM. There are really fun conspiracy theories. I have a pet one that I came up with, and I've got a fun one that I like. So they're fun, right? But like, you can go back to like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which by definition is a conspiracy theory. That was a conspiracy theory that the Jewish nation before Israel was blah, 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 orchestrated. Like Tsar Nicholas II kept a copy in his room, and it was used as a justification for pogroms. So yes. I don't know. And I suspect that if we were to go back to the 60s when like the John Birch Society was saying that, you know, an evil communist cabal or something was running the whole world, I bet we would find examples of people that had, you know, done their own equivalent of going into a basement with a gun looking for pedophiles or something like that. So I do think that there probably is a differentiation that's brought up in the article between kind of the old, like, I got to get the truth out there. This is my passion versus the people that have figured out how to monetize it on Facebook and like are kind of just pumping out security or conspiracy theories as content creation. That I think is probably the meaningful distinction now. But the violent bit, I don't know.
Can I ask?
So there's
I have a
some
question.
Interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Does anyone know if you don't know, that's fine. I genuinely don't know. Is any of like the old KKK stuff, are they linked to conspiracy theory stuff at all? Is there a white supremacy in the old, like the old violent, that stuff?
I mean, I'm sure you probably could have found your fair share of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, but I don't think broadly, speaking, they were pretty upfront about just being general white supremacist bigots.
Yeah, they were.
They didn't really need any rationale of why a particular group was doing something malfeasance. Like it was just the race.
Yeah,
we can fault them for lots of things, but not for transparency. All right, they were, you knew what you were dealing with the KKK. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah,
very upfront. So one thing that interests me about conspiracy theories, and this is I'm sort of cobbling together some research that others have done. This is not my own work. That conspiracy theories, why do we believe in conspiracy theories? And one reason is, we think, is that it gives you a sense of community and it gives you a sense of belonging, which is kind of like what we're talking about, where there's sort of like this charm to like the crazy uncle, and then he gets together with his buddies at the bar and they talk about. And I don't know if you spend much time on like our conspiracy on Reddit, but the few times I've wandered into there, it's actually sort of heartening. Yeah, I've wandered. It's sort of heartening in that it's like, you sort of get this sense of, and there's like a Flat Earthers documentary out there. So my sense is that like, if you really believe in a conspiracy theory, I got very into the missing Malaysia Air flight, and there's some conspiracy theories around that. Like, you just sort of feel like you're in on something, and you kind of have a community of people to talk about it. It gives you a sense, I think there's some research that shows that it gives you a sense of control in a very uncertain world where we have no control. And so it's like, oh, I'm aware of this inside organization that's pulling all the strings, and it's like, it gives you this sort of sense of like a place in the world. And so my read cap on this article is that that gets exploded if the entire, if 40% or 37%, whatever percent of like MAGA Republicans are also in the world of conspiracy theories. And as you said, the president is now touting these things. And so you kind of lose this like club when everyone else is a part of it. And yes, it spirals out into other nasty political things. And you say Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you see like it spirals out. But I think part of it is that the conspiracy theorists, like the OG, are like, hang on, this was our club. Now everyone's in it.
Right. And I would say one thing I was thinking about is that we need these us normal people. I think we're all normal. We all consider ourselves kind of normal. We kind of need these crazy people, because I think that the normal sides have started to believe more and more crazy stuff on their own. Like you saw in that article, they said 54% of Americans don't believe like 9/11 was, like, they believe there's something ulterior happened in 9/11. So it's not like that fringe. And then like, you'll hear, like, I have friends all the time on the left who will say things like, about some crazy conspiracy with like Brett Kavanaugh, where he like paid his credit card bills. I mean, this is like a minor conspiracy, but it's like not like his credit card bills were paid and then he got it. Like, you hear these like little things, and on the right, of course, there's so many examples. And you know, it's like, so I just think that we kind of need these crazy people. Like, they're kind of doing a purpose right now. So I don't think it's any different, I guess what I'm trying to say, than what it's accentuated by the internet. Like, we're more in a hype, everything's hyped up now. So
Kaplan, I ask, what is that? Yeah. You described half of it, but what is the Brett Kavanaugh thing you're talking about? I've never heard that.
Oh, like, you know, I mean, maybe Andrew, you might know, because I know you're more in tune to what people are saying on the left. But like, I've heard multiple times people say, like, you know, when you're like they said, like, when he got into, the reason why he was selected Supreme Court, I think, is like all these like rich people paid off his credit card debt. He had all this crazy credit card debt, and now he's owned by these people.
I don't know this
like
one.
You don't know this one? Oh, I've had multiple people say this to me when talking about this when that was going on, and you hear like I don't know. I feel like it's all gotten more mainstream, like in politics. We're all in these little bubbles. Like everything's
one thing
a little
I'll bit say. And this is my last thought on this is that, and I think they mentioned it in this article we're all referencing, this New York Times article, but that they conspiracy theories have now become like everything else in America have become divided up to the left and the right, where they used to just be like JFK assassination was a plot and you could pick whoever you wanted by Castro, by the CIA. And you didn't have to be left or right.
Bipartisan conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Yes, and then aliens exist. That's bipartisan. They were all kind of bipartisan. Even 9/11. Malaysia Airlines. 9/11. While Bush was in office, he was a Republican. So then that would have been even probably more left-leaning conspiracy than right, or at least independent thinking. And now it's just like comedy now. We've talked about this before, but you have to pick a side. You don't... To be a bad comedian, but still make a good living, you have to go far left or far right and be like, these people on the other side are idiots, and everyone claps, and then you have a career. And it's the same thing now with conspiracy.
Turner, don't give away all my secrets, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very good.
It's the same thing right down the line. So I think that's the big difference.
Well, Turner, on your point, it's like the news media is like where we used to have like a couple newspapers, right? And even the crazy people read the same newspapers. Mm. And now everybody can read everything. You guys, I can't
which
hear
means
me,
you
I
only
guess.
Read we your favorite.
We got you. Keep talking.
It just means that, now everybody can get their little news from every little crazy bubble, as we all know, and they can just believe all sorts of insane things. So,
Let me get my final thought, and then we can move on to the next topic, because I fucking love conspiracy theories, and I could talk about this for an hour. I want to add a little bit. I think, Andrea, you hit a lot of that on the head of, I think conspiracy theories provide an emotional sustenance in the form of community. I would add to that I think they provide status in that, I'm going to drop a thing here. I wrote a novel a few years ago called Frank Got Abducted about alien abductions. And one of the principal characters is a conspiracy theorist. And the motivation for that character, the Cephas character in the book, is that he's kind of living in the middle of nowhere. He's a low-income bachelor. He doesn't have just a lot going for him, but he is on the bleeding edge of reality. He knows what the real world looks like. He's one of the few people on the planet that really knows what's happening. And I think there's something very beguiling about that that makes you feel as if you are part of the core of the world in a way that a lot of the time you're on the periphery. And I also I kind of think conspiracy theories are healthy. I think the root of them a lot of the time is... we want to question the narrative the powerful are crafting. And I think that's a very healthy thing to do in society, whether it's coming from the government or from corporations. Like, they're probably going to craft a narrative that fits their agenda. I think where the conspiracy theories go wonky is when they just completely depart from Hanlon's razor. And the simplest explanation is, some guy fucked up. That's the easiest explanation. They're like, no, Occam's lizard razor. People... Occam's razor is the simplest explanation, right? Hanlon's razor, to clarify, Hanlon's razor is do not attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetency, which I think when it comes to government is probably a more operative one on a regular basis. So I think they get when people are coming up with these weird org charts to explain how lizard people, blah, 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 it just makes more sense that the guy fucked up. But overall, though, I think it kind of it's a healthy impulse to have in a free society.
I have a beautiful analogy, and then let's go to the next topic. But my analogy for you, Heaton, I think you're absolutely right. The analogy is forest fires, which is on occasion, forest fires in little bits and pockets around a region can be very good for the ecosystem because it breaks up the tree line, and so they won't spread. But then if it takes off, then we have a whole huge problem, such as Maui, Australia, everywhere else. And so what we have come to is a growing, the Canadian forest fire of conspiracy theories, whereas previously they were all bubbling up and kind of keeping the rest of us in check and occasionally casting light on this. So thank you so much. Hold your applause. So Cap, can I go to my article? Because I think this is related to what we were just talking about.
I was just
going to
say one thing is that I'm very impressed with Heaton having a new razor. Like, everyone knows Occam's razor.
Yeah, I was
He's too smart for that one. He invented a new one I never heard of. Hanlon or some guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, the other day I missaid it and I called it Hanlon's laser, which is now like a thing over on another podcast.
Heaton's razor, on the other hand, is never assume Heaton made a mistake. Assume he's just smarter than you.
No.
yes, I like just this. Adding that Promulgate now. That to the masses. All Let right. the masses know.
There.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Heaton's razor. All right. So speaking of a divided country, I want to talk about a new trend that I, on the left, am observing, which is also in the New York Times, but other places are talking about it as well, which is the right. Polling is suggesting that voters on the right are getting sick of the anti-woke rhetoric of the political candidates, such as Ron DeSantis, who apparently says the word woke 10 times in a minute in every single speech. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring this to our roundtable is that, Cap, I don't think you were here, but our last roundtable, we talked about whether wokeness is over. And we talked about Hannah Gadsby's exhibit, which I don't even know if it's still in Brooklyn. I never did. I still don't know who she is.
It's because I wasn't participating.
But we were talking last time about how even on the left, we're getting sick of performative wokeness and maybe we're tired of wokeness and talking about all of that. And so this article caught my attention because it's kind of about the other side, which is our Republicans getting sick of complaining about being, of trying to be anti-woke. And is it no longer this powerful political whip by political leaders on the right to be able to say, oh, we're going to shut down wokeness and we're going to censor schools. And according to this particular article and the handful of polls that they were referencing, Republican voters, which I agree with them on this case, are more interested in real things like the economy and other concerns, and that the whole crime. Anti-woke kind of saber crime is fading. And so is it possible that we're looking at coming into an election year where we don't have to hear the right and Fox News and everyone else scream about being anti-woke and burning books and all the rest? And so you three are the more right-leaning people that I know. So I wanted to hear what you think. Are we getting tired of anti-woke rhetoric?
And I'm the only person who's worked in conservative media. And I can say it's not going away for this reason.
No. Okay.
Sorry. It's a labor thing. Like, and I'm just speaking in terms of media. I'm not speaking in terms of politics. But basically, you're always going to have in mass media, you're always going to have a preference for binary thinking. It's always going to be black, white, up, down, because that's something that even the dumbest person in the room can understand. You want to have a broad topic that everybody can get. Like if we start talking about monetary theory, which I'm pretty fucking smart and I get lost real quick on monetary theory, that's not going to make for a good show. But if we're doing a transgender professor yells at old veteran, we all know whose side those are. It's very clear. The dumbest person in the room understands us versus them. That is a base human thing. So that's always going to be there. And I think just from a labor perspective as well, like a lot of hosts don't have time to read books and things because they're on the air so much. But the culture war stuff, it has an instantaneous us versus them thing. You know where you fall on it. And it's just anecdotal evidence of the other team's worse than you thought, ad nauseum. And so for that reason, I think just in terms of this applies to everybody, including the dumbest people in our audience, and it's easy to produce. It's never going to go away the same way that reality television is never going to go away because it's cheap and easy to make.
Yeah, all right. I will. I guess I'll go next. I totally agree with Heaton. I don't know how the New York Times came up with this theory, but it's just I don't know. I tour the U.S. performing at country clubs, and it is not going away. It's because people will bring it up to you after shows. They'll bring up you live in New York City and then they'll assume you're liberal. So then they'll want to talk about, and usually it's in a very polite, nice way. They've just watched you do comedy for an hour. They like you. And they're like, how could you live in a city that has this, or that does this? And it's a lot of culture war stuff. Also just that's me anecdotally saying it, but basic research is, I looked up who's polling number three right now in the Republican primary. Do you guys know who it is?
It's
Vivek Ramaswamy is polling ahead of Mike Pence, ahead of Chris Christie. And
Vivek Ramaswamy, a Republican just to vote for Pence because I sort of feel bad for him.
This is Ramaswamy is this is the real clear politics where they bring all the polls together and they average them. So he's in third at like 6.5% or something like that. And the only thing anyone knows about him is that he's anti-woke. That's his entire platform is being anti-woke. Pence was the vice president of the United States of America. You would seem to have, there's a lot more. And he, before that, he was a governor of a state. There's people have known about him for a lot longer. They've known, I'm sure he has policies. I haven't really looked into Pence that much, but there's obviously a lot of policies he has opinions on one way or the other. He has a religious background, right? He has all these facets to him beyond just one specific thing. Vivek Ramaswamy is literally, his whole thing is he's anti-woke, and he keeps climbing in the polls.
I don't follow him that much. I'd like to interview him, but like my understanding is he talks about economics and he talks about things like that. Like he's got kind of a Reaganite libertarian streak to him. So like is it just that we're just seeing the woke stuff? Because I know he's done a ton of interviews, and I would be surprised if that's the only thing that he's talking about.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't say it's his main thing is that he's further to the right than Trump on culture wars. His whole thing is he's big culture war guy and big on Trump hasn't gone far enough. That's
but DeSantis is the culture
DeSantis.
War guy too.
DeSantis. There's no O.
Meeple, whatever his name is. He's a big culture war guy. That's his whole campaign and he's flaming out. So that to counter that.
Which I find interesting. The New York Times reads that as not DeSantis is running a bad campaign and reads it as all Republicans have grown exhausted with this. Like I read that as like, I think DeSantis is kind of a wonky nerd character deep down. I don't think that he's the kind of Trumpian showman that Trump is. And he's trying to use Trump's tactics for a personality that doesn't work with it.
And Cap, just to push back, if we're doing an experiment where you want to isolate one specific thing, DeSantis with an I has a lot of, he also has a lot of things about him that you can learn, right? Not just culture war stuff, but there's a million things. He also has a long track record, a long career. Vivek Ramaswamy has for most people in America has come out of nowhere in the past few months. And that being his one thing, he's gaining every single month. Now, the counter to what I just said is that he's still only at 6.5%. So it's not like he's winning, but he's doubled. He was 3.5% a month and a half, like 2 months ago, a month ago. And now he's double that. So I would say no, the woke thing is not going away as far as.
I would add just a small point of clarity on the article itself. So I think that I framed it. My question for you all is anti-wokeness going away, and I believe you that it is not. I just want to say that the source of this information and the reason the New York Times was talking about it is that they run their own polls, so New York Times Siena polls, where they asked candidates about they asked voters about a hypothetical Republican candidate, one who was focusing on anti-woke and like culture war stuff, and another who was focused on law and order. And something like 65% said, I prefer the law and order candidate over the person whose main focus is defeating radical woke ideology. So I guess one of the takeaways based on everything that you all are saying is that, okay, the anti-wokeness isn't going away, but it's not as salient as law and order or something else. Though, Turner, your point about Ramaswamy's
Rise.
Growing. Is that his name? Did I say it wrong?
Yeah, Ramaswamy.
Sure. Let's go with it.
is an interesting one. So most every candidate has a stance on all of these things. I guess the takeaway here is that as inflammatory as like the Bud Light stuff and Barbie and whatever else is in the right media, that as Heaton discussed in the media, voters on the right are more interested in candidates who have other platforms.
Yeah, and I have one more piece and then I'll let everyone else go. Sorry. Yeah. But based off that, I read the same article and I think that what the New York Times is kind of maybe on purpose of avoiding here and not talking about is that all of these candidates can be both.
Exactly.
I would assume they're all law and order candidates and they're anti-woke candidates. And then the last thing is oh man, I just forgot what it was. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
I would be very curious to look at that polling, not based on the broad Republican coalition, but rather the people that are most apt to vote in the primaries versus Republicans that just vote in the general election, because I think that could be a salient data point. As we so frequently bring these conversations when Andrea and I talk back to Morris Fiorina, there's pretty good data that the average American in either party is much more centrist than the extremists within that party. And it's the extremists that vote in the primaries. So in 2020, I believe the data at the moment is that in 2020, only about 10% of the people in the country participated in the primaries, which is crazy to think about. But 90% of the population did not participate in the primaries. And so you had candidates that were selected by the most red and the most blue members of red team and blue team. It would not surprise me if the average Republican that rocks up to the general election has a higher priority of bread and butter issues like crime, economy, jobs, and so forth, but that the really, you know, yay team, go GOP is much more into to woke culture war stuff. And also, I'll add really quick, just before I head off any comments, like, I like a little bit of that, because like, I too am bothered by illiberalism and by cultural authoritarianism and censorship and all these things. I'm bothered by it. My issue with the media tends to be when it becomes exclusively that. I find that that ends up being a kind of lazy way to just whip people into a froth.
I think that the wokeness, it works. It's got to be more specific. Like you said, law and order. Well, that can be a woke thing where if like you're super woke, you're defund the police, you know, like if it's about the schools, I still think that's a winning issue for Republicans.
Yeah.
If it's like the Disney stuff or these like Bud Light stuff, it does get silly even to, you know, voters. So I can see them. And I also think that the Democrat or the left in general has come back from the brink a little bit. I'm sensing like things aren't as crazy as they were a few years ago. It's getting a little, I mean, we did release a clip today, Turner and I, talking about woke Snow White, but I do feel like because we're looking to cash in just like the right-wing media that he was talking about, but I do feel like the crazy isn't as prevalent. Like I know so many people who are Democrats who make fun of woke stuff all the time now, like in good company, like in free. And so I think, and that takes some of the air out of the balloon. So it's not as winning. I do think it's not as winning of an issue as it was a couple years ago.
I think
people are still going to be pounding it, you know, just because it's easy. But
Kev, I think you're right. And I think the real headline here is that in our last roundtable, we basically predicted it and we scooped the New York Times just in terms of overall passion and I love your word, heat and frothiness around wokeness on both sides seems to maybe be dissipating because we are seeing that it's silly in many of these cases. On the left, the word woke is not even a word that people really use on the left, maybe because we're kind of in it, but just
anymore.
Generally speaking, yeah. Anymore. And generally speaking, you know, the cancel culture and all of that is really seems to be to me to be more of a, what's the word? Is it a bogeyman? Like on the right, this is what the left is about.
Bogeyman.
And it's not even really a thing.
You got Vivek's name right, but you didn't know bogeyman.
I think it is a thing, but I think it's overblown, right? So like when you look at, again, you look at the polling data, like the average Democrat is a, like the average, if we're just doing average, is a white non-evangelical Christian, which is not what the, how it would be portrayed by either side if they were making a poster.
Right.
If the Republicans were making a
poster.
That's
the average Republican too, by the way.
Both, because it remains the average in the country. I think if Republicans were making a poster of the Democrats, it would be like, atheist, communist, transgender,
non-binary,
like you would,
it's like, disabled,
right? In reality, like it's much broader, I think that woke faction is there, and they're irritating as fuck. They're not the whole thing, I think that like part of it, like again, I'm very bothered by the censorious mechanisms there. Of we're not gonna bad ideas must be lanced like a cancer. They should not be engaged with because basically they're in my view straight up religion and are viewing it as blasphemy and heresy. All of that's really bad. I don't really like that. Think that we should keep our eye on it. But at the same time, a lot of the proportionality assigned to it, I think, is off. So like in issues involving transgender people, these can be important. These can be, you know, these are reasonable things to for conversations to have for society to work out in terms of what do we do with people that here in Scotland, where I am, a rapist was convicted and was sent to prison and he went, I'm a dame. And they had to abide by that. Right. So these are good conversations to have. But like, I also want to point out that like the transgender population, based on the data I've seen, is about 0.2%. It's 1/5 of 1%. So it's so fractionally small, but it gets such a disproportionate amount of attention from all sides of the media spectrum.
It's 25% in New York City high school or something like that. But anyway,
is it really?
I don't remember where it was. I think it was in New York or California. Some liberal area, I saw a poll and like 25% of high school students were identifying as trans.
No way. It's 25%?
It's like trendy. Yeah, some crazy. It's like it's a trendy thing to do, you know, just to say.
See, the conspiracy theorists are losing their community. The trans people are losing their community. It's just coming mainstream, and we hate it.
That's the kind of thing that people ask me when I'm on the road doing country clubs. They go, how do you, is everyone in New York really trans? That's what we read.
No. It's just the high school kids who can't figure it out yet, which, you know.
Turner, I'm so glad you have your fingers on the pulse of America. Thank you for that.
Yeah, he's the guy.
You're welcome. Kaplan actually reminded me of my final point, which I forgot earlier, but it was when Kaplan said it was a good distinction. He said that people are interested in, you know, law and order. It is woke to, it is seen as anti-woke to, if you want to protect the police. Right. But then they get kind of bored when it gets down to Bud Light and Disney. And the article makes a big distinction there, which I think is, maybe they're kind of distorting the opinion of the right a little bit and using it to say anti-woke is over. But I think what they even conclude in the article is that when they interview Republicans about this, they poll Republicans. Republicans are not interested in anti-wokeness if it's shutting down businesses. Because ultimately, most Republicans want government to stay out of business. So if it's if it's protecting the police, well, that's government stuff, right? If it's involving the government, they're fine with it. But if it's saying, well, we're going to shut down Disney because they won't, whatever their internal Disney decision might be, or Bud Light, like we're going to get Bud Light out of the stores. If I don't know if DeSantis is saying this or not. He probably isn't. But we're going to get rid of Bud Light out of America because they support trans people. I think that's a bridge too far for the version of the right who's really just into, you know, like, let me do whatever I want with my business and my life and my guns and all that stuff.
Right. And
let
Tripp,
me
I think, understands
share
that.
An example of something that I came across recently that I think sums up all of the problems we've just been describing and is a microcosm of all the stupidity in America and how we're all just talking past each other and freaking out about all these topics. So there is a vegan soft serve ice cream place that I like to go to in Lower Manhattan, of course. It's called Urban Dessert Lab, and I follow their Instagram, and they posted something that said, we're so sorry, we have to be closed for a few days. The shop was burgled, and equipment was stolen, and we have a GoFundMe going, and we're a small Black-owned business. If you're able to support, that would be helpful. We're going to get reopened as soon as we possibly can. It was just like a black square with text. The comment section was a sight to behold. I don't think we ever need to do another political poll again. We just need to read these comment sections. The comment sections were filled with people saying, well, you live in New York City, so of course you need to be okay with the fact that you're going to get robbed because you're not supporting law and order, you liberal idiots. And then the other half of the comments were, why does it matter if you're black owned? Why did you have to even list that? You should say that you're just a business and you need all the support you can get. And then the third was conspiratorial, which said something doesn't add up. Why would people go in and steal ice cream equipment? Why would you leave cash in the register anyway? And so it was like all three things. It was like anti-woke stuff, law and order stuff, and conspiracy theories, just destroying the comments.
Did anybody
anyway,
get
when
mad
they
at
open,
them for
I'll
calling? Did they call the police?
Yeah, that was my question.
I don't know.
Did they? Because they get mad. I know that people get mad at companies in like New York or San Francisco if they call the police when they were robbed.
Because you're not supposed to call the police no matter what.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Well, and then the other actually, and Turner, you would know about this. The other point that I thought was maybe the most reasonable one in the comments was, don't you have insurance for this, like business insurance? And I don't know. Yeah. Do they have business
That's
insurance
why I don't
for
give
selling
to
ice cream?
For anybody.
I can't remember if we did. I don't think we did. We probably should have, but no, we didn't have business insurance.
Big shout out to the people that don't live in New York City who took time out of their day to randomly go through vegan ice cream websites to go on the message board. This is astonishing to me that anybody would have that much time.
That's why people are
the whole thing is stupid.
Time, too much time.
Yeah.
Should we go to the last topic?
Yes.
Let's do it.
I think Turner, you've got the, you've got something on your mind there for the last.
So yeah, here's the. So this has been in the news recently, but obviously Trump's now, as of recording today, as of this morning, he's been indicted for the fourth time over the last few months. I think it started in like early April or maybe late March. His first one. So he's been indicted four times, and I don't think have we never had a president indicted before him? Is he the first?
Never.
You guys might know better. Yep. Or the first?
Nixon wasn't indicted. No.
He was never indicted. Nixon never was. So he's the first to ever be indicted. And what we've learned very quickly is there is no better a way to raise money and to put a jolt into your campaign than to be indicted by the law as a former president or as a candidate for president. The first time Trump got indicted a few months ago, he raised $13.5 million that week. The second time he raised $7 million. And then we don't have, I looked everywhere. I couldn't find the data on the last two. Obviously the fourth time was today. It just happened like an hour or two ago. Each time he raises a bunch of money, each time his poll numbers go up, and each time DeSantis and everybody else go down. And then if you remember back to the closest we have to this, Bill Clinton got impeached in 1998-99 for lying under oath, saying he did not have sex with that woman, I think was his words. And speaking of Monica Lewinsky, at that time, he was polling at 73% approval rating, which was his all-time high and almost unfathomable in today's climate that any president could ever be approved by 73% of America. And his polling numbers went up the minute he got impeached and he got proven, you know, he was a liar essentially under oath. So my question to all of you, and anyone can take this, what is it about American culture that we love a good criminal? Why is it that, and this is nonpartisan, it's that we're now taking data from both sides, 30 years, 25 years apart from each other. Why is it that people support this?
I think a lot of the time, a lot of the time, with the two examples you gave of Clinton and Trump, there was such an intense political element around the indictment and the trial that it feels as though you are getting picked on because of the baddies in politics, as opposed to the actual justice of the system. I vaguely remember that with Clinton, like a lot of the Republicans were bothered by some other thing. And I don't even remember what it was now, but it was like lying about some foreign policy thing. That's what bothered them. But the narrative, whether from the religious right or whether from the media, ended up being turned into, so he got a blowjob, meh. And it ended up making it look as though the Republicans were just really out to get him and mean and nasty. And I think it ended up helping his popularity as a result of that. With Trump, Trump's core base is the people that think that they have been left behind by an elitist group of coastal misanthropes that don't give a shit about them and have rigged the system to benefit themselves. And frankly, they have a point in many ways. So I don't think it's terribly surprising that they would look at this and go, this is clearly a political witch hunt to ruin the one guy that tried to bring a wrecking ball to the swamp. And it all it does is confirm to us that he is being hounded and victimized by the people that we hated and voted him to go attack. I think the effect that it's really going to have politically is not so much helping him in terms of his overall polling. The effect it's going to have is it's going to suck all of the oxygen out of the Republican primary. So if there was any chance of Vivek Ramaswamy or Mike Pence or
Chris Christie
or DeSantis or Tim Scott, any of the others, those are gone now. Those
Nikki
are over
Haley,
now.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley. There might have been, because when DeSantis came out of the gate, he was polling pretty well. And like if it had continued to pick up, might have been a thing. There were a lot of Republicans that wanted Trump minus Trump. I think now, though, that's it. Like game over. The Republican primary's done. Trump is like some kind of weird bacteria that lives on the rim of a volcano underwater. He feeds off of attention in a way that no other human being in all of history has ever been able to do as well. And so this is all going to benefit his campaign. He's going to make the whole thing about himself very easily. And the Republicans are just going to be utterly incapable of getting the slightest bit of attention. So like that's done. That the effect of this is Trump gets the primary.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say quickly that people just naturally human instinct, they circle the wagons around there. You know, if like someone picks on your brother, you go defend them. Like people, so Republicans, there might have been, I don't know what you, Andrew and you think about this idea that like, there was an opening for a Republican candidate to maybe be like on early before the indictments to be like, this guy's corrupt. I'm going to be the mainstream candidate. We're not going to be, but they didn't take it. Only Chris Christie took it and nobody likes him anyway. So now I agree with you. The moment's passed. It's over now. People are circling the wagons. Republicans are going to rally to him the same way Bill Clinton famously got popular, like you said, Turner, but then Al Gore lost because it didn't translate because Al Gore tried to distance himself from Bill Clinton. And it only, so like he didn't get the circle wagons effect. You know, it's like it only works for Trump. It doesn't work for DeSantis. So,
I think Turner, you raise an interesting point about, I love the question about why do we love a criminal? Because I think that we do. And I'm going to overly simplify American culture by referencing some French dude I met like a million years ago at some academic something. And someone was saying something and he was like, oh, you Americans, you're all outlaws and cowboys. And that like stood out to me as, oh, that's what French people think of us. Or that's maybe what the rest of the world thinks of us, to oversimplify incredibly. But, you know, Australia is a place where they sent all the criminals. Like, this is where the people who were literally running from or outside the law came. And we do have a strong culture of celebrating people who are breaking the law and libertarian streaks and all of that. And so, you know, with Clinton, I think in a way it sort of becomes more endearing because he's not perfect. And, you know, a lot of people could identify with what he was describing. Bush made his career on being a cowboy. And I think Trump is, you know, I think the language of draining Trump, all of them have been smart political operatives to spin it as a way of like, oh, it's a witch hunt or I'm whatever. But I think we were founded on breaking the law. So, of course, we would love presidents that do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, if you think about it, it's a great point. Cowboy movies were our first genre of movies, right? Yeah. A lot of these are either outlaws or they're chasing outlaws. It's one way or the other. And then after that, it was mob movies. The 1970s was all the mafia movies, right? And these are criminals. We're celebrating criminals every step of the way. And then you get into, I mean, even most recently, like The Wire is essentially, it's about cops, but it's also about, it's humanizing and celebrating.
Sopranos. We love criminals.
Exactly. The street drug dealers.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. So it is part of our culture to celebrate, and it goes all the way up to the president. Do you think that it's also, there's also something here that Americans miss or don't trust, have the government so much that they would even trust the president over the quote government? We seem to take the side of the president every time over the big bad government, even though the president is the head of the big bad government.
Right. No, I think you're right. And I think that's only gotten more intense over time. I mean, Trump, as Heaton eloquently put it, as the bacteria on the volcano or whatever it was, like Trump is, I think, the best at wielding this like cult of personality move. But I as far as I know from my own lifetime, presidents have gone from being heads of state, heads of government, as you said, to individual people that we either love or we don't. And my first memory of that, I think, is probably George W. Bush. When he was elected, my fellow people on the left were horrified. And it's like, he's a bad guy. And we're mad at him. And then when Obama was elected, it was like, oh, our hero is in office. And then Trump is elected and it's like, oh, he's bad. Like over the course of at least, let's say, the 2000s, I think we've separated the identity of the president from the apparatus of government in a way that maybe we didn't before. But I don't know for sure. I don't know enough about history to say.
I think it feels very much to me like if you were to go back to like 1740 when I was born. And like, you know, like James II as a Catholic, and you're like, a Catholic cannot sit on the throne of England. The whole realm would be evil. A Protestant must sit on the throne of England. Like that's how it is.
Did you speak to my grandfather?
Yes, yeah. This happens.
There was no one he hated
years.
More than Catholics, by the way.
A Republican sits in the White House. Therefore, the whole country's horrible. A Democrat sits in the White House. The whole fucking country's going to hell. That it's the, like this weird, like, Pharaoh God King complex we have that the president is the spiritual filter for everyone in America with the rest of the cosmos. I want to back up a little bit. I think that there is a hallowed tradition that I like weirdly like and I shouldn't, which is the guy who's a crook, but he's our crook. And like the South is great about this. The South has so many warm, colorful, like slimy used car salesman, baby kissing politician characters, like Oklahoma, where I'm from. Our old governor was David Boren, who was the university president where I went. So I knew him that way. And back when he was running for governor, there were many rumors that he was gay. This was a thing that haunted his political career. And at one point when he was running the primaries, it was him, Gene Stipes, and another guy. And the other guy got up and his pitch was, look, there's three people in this race. I'm quoting him, mind you. And he went there's a queer, a crook, and me. And Gene Stipes rose his hand and went, I'm the crook. and everybody applauded.
Whoa.
And like there's just a bunch of people like that who like, you know, they'll say things like, you know, honest graft is when you're bought and you're paid for. And by God, you respect that agreement. You know, like there is that kind of like weird, like,
well, wasn't, like, I mean, deals. Trump said, Kaplan brought this up to me the other day, but Trump, one of his big things in 2016 was, I can fix the tax code because I've cheated on it my whole life. Basically.
And on that, it's like, I do think that, and this actually ties into the conspiracy and the woke stuff as well. I think that the right wing used to always believe in like law and order. As we said, law and order, they believe in law and order, but they don't, they have to also take the sides of the district attorneys, the prosecutors, people are guilty. Mm. And it used to be a left wing thing to think someone's not guilty till, you know, they've been found guilty. And that kind of flipped over the years, I feel like. And so it ties into this moment where like so many people on the right don't believe, they like think the whole system's rigged. They think it's fixed anyway. They don't believe that, they don't believe the evidence. They don't believe, they're just not going to believe it. So by just going after Trump and indicting him, they did him the biggest favor possible. It was like such a huge mistake. They should have just waited or just not. Just
well, I don't know if it was a mistake. I think,
I mean, if you don't want him to be president, I mean, if you really don't want him to be president, should never have indicted him.
I mean, if it was purely political motivated and not based off the law of our country,
I think it was I think it was a good thing that he was indicted for the most recent one, the one that everybody's discussing about the fake electors. I think that there's literally no good option for the country at this point. Either we have to have an incredibly politicized trial where a former president potentially goes to prison, which is really dicey, like bad precedent, or alternately, a guy that tried to steal the election gets off scot-free and lets all future authoritarian thugs know that they could maybe pull it off. Like, I would argue that the downside of not prosecuting him would be worse in terms of precedent than allowing for the election to be politicized through it. But I do agree with you, Kaplan, in that the indictment that came out of New York City 4 months ago, I read that one and it was garbage. Like, I'm not an attorney, but I read it and I was like, this is in my read, there is a prosecutor in New York City who is going to have a standing ovation and a parade of blowjobs for the next 5 years because he's the guy that indicted Donald Trump.
It's a woman.
And, No. In New York City, it was a guy. It was a guy in New York City.
I thought it was Letitia James.
She's the Attorney General.
You and I both live in New York, and we don't know.
You know what? I believe the prosecuting attorney who wrote the indictment was a guy.
Blowjobs.
Either way, oral sex and applause will result on whoever in New York City indicts the president. And if you looked at that particular indictment, he had like 36 counts because he basically took one count separated into three things, like writing the check, mailing the check, and the accounting of the check. And then he divided it by every month this was done. So what any sane person would describe as one potential crime was turned into like 36. Like it was real squirrely. I think that was a really bad move because, well, that's great for that guy's career. It's going to be fantastic for him. He's going to have a really fun 3 or 4 years in New York City. That was political. And it was a bad case. And it did add a fuel to the fire of people that went, you know, this is just a witch hunt for Trump. But the more recent one, I think, has juice to it.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again, because I think Heaton, we need you right now, which is, I agree with you that this is like, there's two bad outcomes for the country, and we were at this fork in the road. And I agree with you that the first one is the least important indictment. I still went to go see him get arraigned.
You did?
I have photos if anyone wants to see it. Yeah, I did. It was like MAGA and then the left, like just like on either side and police going around.
How much were those tickets?
I sold them for $1,000 each. I went down early and marked off the area. But what I wanted to say is that
scalping,
I have long
tickets for the Trump indictment.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, that really, what we really need is we need a moderate Republican who is a reasonable dude or a woman, but probably dude, to run for office and just be better than Trump. And that person never came forward. Like, we didn't see, there was like rumors that it would be Pence. Ron DeSantis is obviously Trump minus Trump, but like too far culturally. We need like a centrist, like a sense, someone who wants to vote for not Trump, but doesn't want to vote for Biden. We just need reasonable.
What about Chris Krispy Kreme?
Will you just run? Will you just run for president? I think that's the only way.
Heaton.
Thank you.
Heaton.
I should add, I'm not a Republican, but thank you. I'm flattered.
No, I know, but just center, right of center.
You are, according to the left. You are.
We need a charismatic.
Definitely am.
Wait. We need someone charismatic, is what you're saying.
You know, I'd say keep your eyes on the No Labels movement. It will probably flame out like every other attempt that has been done in the last 20 years. This happens every four to eight years. It happened. The last time this happened was back in 2012, where Romney versus Obama, a bunch of like a bunch of like former members of Congress, former governors, things like that, that are like moderates and centrists that are kind of pissed off at the conservative and progressive wings of their respective parties start rumbling, going like, maybe we should form a centrist party. They didn't end up doing it in 2012. This time around, they're looking to form like a unity party ticket called the No Labels ticket. So it would be like John Huntsman and Joe Manchin. It'd be something like that. So it'd be like a conservative, like Jim Webb and Larry Hogan, something like that, where it'd be a unity ticket. They'll probably blanch, because my guess is when it comes close to election day and they realize they might actually spoil the election for one of the two parties, they'll all kind of duck out. But I would suggest that it would be the best possible thing they could do, because that is going to scare the shit out of the party that gets the vote stolen and force them to course correct. If you'd had like a couple of Republicans like form the Whig Party in 2016, knowing that they would lose, but it was enough to eat away at the Trump thing, the Republican Party would have gone the other direction.
That would have been smart. Would have been smart.
What if we can get to convince the all the conspiracy theorists on both sides to join one party, and then that'll be a third party, and then it'll make the Republican Party less crazy by default, because they're not gonna. I mean, there are
anti-vaxxers on both sides for very different reasons that I think could unite the country once and for all.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can be their nominee. And
or Andrew, you mentioned a minute ago, and I realize you were joking, but you said that you were tempted to become a Republican so you could vote for Pence out of pity. Like,
that's right.
I think it would be very helpful for people. Like, if people really think the Republicans are a batshit crazy party, they should become Republicans, because then they could participate in the primaries, and they can, of the eight candidates, they can select the sanest one, and they're going to have more of an effect than America. But whenever I pitch this to people, what do they say? A Catholic cannot sit on the throne of England. My political party is my identity. It is cosmic. Yes. Yeah. I don't actually give a shit about changing things. I just want my team to win.
Mm. Yep. You know what the solution, though, is? The Biden's solution has to be. There's only one plan to keep Trump from winning. He's got to arrest his son. If he throws Hunter Biden in jail,
you know,
then
arrest
the Democrats
himself.
Will rally around. They'll circle the wagons for him. It'll be the same effect.
That's a he's got to get a sacrifice that I'm ready for.
He's got to get Letitia James to indict him.
To indict him, because that was the thing, like the conspiracy thing earlier, like everyone ignored it, which gives fuel to the crazy Republicans who think it's the exact same thing. No, it's not the same.
If Biden wants to win, he's got to go to prison. Put us in charge of all of these candidates. We will get them all locked up, and then they'll all win.
For the good of the country, we'll get them all locked up.
Country of outlaws. God bless America. All right, we did it.
I think
that's it. Right, that's on it. That note, does anybody have to say plug it. Anything about their podcast? Nope. All right. Well, that's.
Should we all quickly go around real quick? I'm Andrew Heaton. I host the Political Orphanage. As you can see, there is growing momentum for me to run for president as a Republican, and yet I am an independent. So if, like you feel like you've been left behind by the two major parties, you're a sane, thoughtful person who has friends you disagree with and do not feel at home in red team or blue team, perhaps you could find a home with the Political Orphanage, and I encourage you to join us.
Join all the Heaton heads. They're great people. We are Lost in America. It is me and Kaplan, and we have a comedian guest every week in a different country around the world to explain to us and talk about the major news event happening in their country. We're not talking like wacky, funny events. It's just whatever the big news of the world is that week. Whether it's election in Spain or an assassination in Ecuador or the Flemish trying to secede from Belgium. We'll find a comedian there. They will explain the whole story to us over 1 hour. Lost in America podcast.
It's the number one way that I find out what's happening in the rest of the world. My name is Andrea Jones, where I host the Majoring in Everything podcast. We are gearing up for season 3, and it's a podcast about people who specialize in more than one seemingly unrelated thing. Cap, I got to get you on the show, but
I'm the real estate agent. I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. You got to get me on.
There we go. But Turner was on talking about running a business and running a comedy career. Heaton's been on to talk about politics and comedy, and I've had lots of other people on who do lots of different things. I'm also I need to talk with all of you about this because I need advice again. Looking to relaunch or launch a new social science, data science kind of podcast where we figure out what the hell is going on once and for all with some academics and comedians and things like that. So stay tuned for that.
Sounds good. Excited for season 3. Critics are saying it's the best season yet.
There we go. Right.
So anyway, all right. Well, is that it? Are we done?
That's it.
Good chat, everybody.
My son just rang the doorbell. I got to go. So on that note, good talking to you.